You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.
Last Word on Sports Hockey Podcast on the Power Play. I'm your host, Ben Kerr, and with me is, for his second show, my co-host, Colton Prail. Colton, how's it going tonight?
Wonderful. This is my first podcast recorded in my new home in Saskatchewan. So, you know, new things, but same things.
Yeah, we can see you out there on the local global Regina newscasts.
So yeah, I did a Christmas commercial for them as my first on-air thing. So I'm really glad that's on the television.
Well, congratulations on the new position. Certainly bigger and brighter things for you going forward.
But thank you.
Speaking of things that might not be bigger and brighter, we've got an outdoor game between our two favorite teams coming up on Saturday as the Ottawa Senators and Montreal Canadiens face off in a battle of 25th, as of right now, 25th and 29th overall in the NHL. What's the purpose of all these outdoor games in the NHL? I mean, I get that this one is kind of special because it's the anniversary of the first ever NHL game, which was indoors, by the way. But has the NHL gone too far? Is there too many outdoor games now?
Oh, I think so. I mean, like, if we're honest, the purpose of the NHL outdoor games are we get to make new jerseys, sell new merch, and make people, more people than normal, pay extra for tickets. You know, this is the first outdoor game that I am excited for in a while. One, because the Sens are in it, and two, just because it is a little different. You know, there is a bit of a meaning to it. But yeah, I mean, it's hard not to feel like they've just been merchandised.
Yeah, no, I think the NHL, there's talk of the NHL being like, not doing as well with these games not doing as well on TV, and the Winter Classics ratings are still somewhat strong, but are not where they were. And the other games, the other outdoor games that aren't the Winter Classic, just have virtually no impact on ratings versus a regular NHL regular season game. The appeal of being outdoors just isn't there for TV audiences anymore. But I think that, as you said, there's the merch and there is getting more people in at an inflated price. So they are still big money makers for the league. But we have seen that start to wane a little bit in terms of they aren't money makers or ratings drivers on television anymore.
Well, that's just it. And I mean, like, maybe if he... I want to say maybe follow the NFL and only do like one game, you know, one specialty game, that this case London versus outside. But even then, I feel like the NFL's London games don't have the same appeal anymore. Like, I think this was a cool idea when it first started, and I still love the alumni games, but like, it just doesn't, there's not a huge draw for me anymore. It's not new.
It's not new, and you know what? I've seen enough of these. I'm not going to be able to watch the game on Saturday, unfortunately. I've got a work Christmas party, but my law firm Christmas parties are pretty legendary, so I'm not too upset about it. That said, I mean, it's bad hockey. It really is not good hockey to watch on TV. No matter how good the NHL's engineers and ice-making crews are, and they are fantastic, they're the best at what they do, it's still not the same as a controlled indoor environment, and the ice is not in good conditions. Weather outside changing a few degrees can really alter the ice. Any type of moisture, whether it be snow or rain, is a huge factor. The sun and the glare and everything getting into players' eyes can be a factor. Wind can be a factor. And it takes away from the spectacle of the best hockey league in the world. It doesn't look like it. It looks like beer league hockey when you watch it. And it's not a fun spectacle on TV.
And that's not what you need when you've got the worst or second worst team in the league playing a bottom six team.
Yeah, yeah. And with how bad that division is, one of those two teams could still make the playoffs.
I know. I know. I was looking at the math the other day. I mean, theoretically, I think especially Ottawa's out of it. Like you look at Buffalo, they would have to have a better record than the Lightning did to start the season over the last 50 games, like play at a better winning points percentage to make the playoffs. And I feel like Ottawa is not that far off. You know, it's like you got to sweep all of the games against the Bruins and hope the Bruins lose a couple and maybe you'll get the third spot.
I think it's the Bruins. I don't know. I look at those teams and I see Florida without Luongo long term. Mm-hmm. And I see tire fires in Detroit, Ottawa, and Buffalo. And I think it's going to mm-hmm. be Montreal and Boston for that third spot.
Oh, I do too. If I am Ottawa right now, and like maybe this is overly optimistic, but I've got my eye on Dahlin. You know, if Carlson is potentially leaving, that's a replacement. Maybe not to the same degree, but that's definitely a 1D.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and Dahlin's fantastic. I think we learned something with Colorado last year.
Oh yeah.
Is don't count on anything based on the standings. I mean, it's nice to have a little bit of a better chance, but mm-hmm. this new lottery system, you could fall quite. And I mean, it's the same thing with Patrick Laine. Winnipeg came out of nowhere to get Patrick Laine. Mm-hmm. Last year, we had all three teams kind of come out of nowhere. Don't just, you know, if you're bad, you're bad, and then cross your fingers.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree.
All right. So, I mean, that's the outdoor game. I'm sure it's fun for the people in Ottawa. Like, I think cities that haven't had outdoor games yet, I still think that they're going to generate excitement in those towns.
Yeah, I think going to the outdoor game is the only, like, really fun part of it left. Like, I'll still watch, and it'll still be neat, but it's not the same. If I could go, it would be totally different. I would be very excited.
Yeah, I did go to one. I went to an AHL one in Hamilton between the Bulldogs and the Toronto Marlies at the time. That was part of a doubleheader. I actually did both games. I did that one in Hamilton, and then I drove to Toronto to see the Leafs and Canadiens play on a Saturday night on the same day. And the game was the outdoor game was like 7-1 for the Marlies. Or 8-1. I can't remember. It was a blowout. It was, and I know it was one on the other side. It was 7 or 8-1. Someone will probably tweet at me. It was 6-1 or it was 9-1, but whatever. It was a blowout. And it was cold. And we sat there under like blankets and whatever. It just really wasn't an enjoyable experience. And I'm not sure if it was the cold or and the wet seats, and because it was like freezing rain when it was going mm-hmm. on. Or if it was the blowout on the ice or what it was, but it was not an enjoyable experience. I mean, I'll put it that way. I've heard people have had great times at outdoor games too. So it may just have been the score. I don't know.
I've covered my fair share of outdoor sporting activities. And it seems from what I've witnessed that if you have some sort of, you know, warming liquid, perhaps hot chocolate for the children, other things for grown-ups, that helps your enjoyment. But yeah, it's not all it's cracked up to be, especially when it's get like blowing snow and then you can't see, you know, the playing surface.
Yeah, no, and I've had some fun at some other outdoor activities. It's just the only outdoor hockey game I've been to. Now, I mean, well, I don't think that it would ever get to that point, but I think a game. We've all seen the pictures out of Buffalo from last weekend from the football game. And that was just insanity. And there's no way that they're going to be able to play hockey through that because you wouldn't be able to skate. But a snowfall like that, similar to the first Winter Classic, which was the Pittsburgh Buffalo game, where they had that snowfall coming down during that game, also in the same stadium. That was the most unique, I think, of the outdoor games. Yeah. Something like that would be cool to watch, but I mean the other ones we just haven't. The weather hasn't really been something that you could see on TV. I know wind has been a factor in a few of these outdoor games.
Detroit, Toronto from a few years back when they played in, was it Michigan Stadium?
Yeah,
that was like that too. That was a ton of snow.
Yeah, that made for some extra fun in that game. The one in Michigan Stadium versus the one that was at BMO.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, well, moving on to the merchandising, I have a bit of a story, and I don't know if you've seen what's going on with the Adidas and the Fanatics jerseys.
To a certain extent.
Okay. So, obviously, they've got me with these outdoor game jerseys. I decided I wanted to buy a Montreal one when I was in the city of Montreal last weekend. So I went to like 8 different stores downtown, and I wanted an Adidas jersey first. That was the first thing. And only 2 of the 8 had the Adidas version of the jersey. The rest all had the Fanatics jersey with their pressed-on logo instead of being embroidered and whatever. And I just think it looks like a cheap jersey. I've seen Chinese fakes that look better than those. So that's my first issue, is that why does everyone have these Fanatics jerseys and not the Adidas ones? And I realized the price difference. But then the second issue was Adidas actually did not make the player that I wanted. And the player that I wanted was Jonathan Drouin. You know, it's not like it's an obscure guy. He's playing first line center for the team. He's the most high profile French player on the Montreal Canadiens. You'd think that they would make some Jonathan Drouin Centennial Classic jerseys, but apparently they didn't. I even spoke to the guys at the Bell Center, and they're like, they haven't even given us number kits. We have number kits to make Carey Price jerseys and Shea Weber jerseys, and that's it. We do not have the letters or the numbers to make any other player.
Oh my God.
Order. And I'm like,
not even patches?
No, nobody. Like those 2 guys, and that's it. If you wanted the Adidas, they could do a little bit more with the Fanatics jerseys, but as I said, with the Fanatics jerseys, I wasn't, it was only like a $50 price difference between the two, and I just was not impressed with the look of the Fanatics.
That's ridiculous.
So I ended up ordering it in Hamilton. They say they can do it out here. I don't know how they're going to do it. I'm going to have to see when my order comes in. Hopefully it'll be in before our next show, but I paid an arm and a leg for them to do it as a special order with the Drouin jersey. Something that they couldn't even do a week ago at the Bell Center. Like, to me, if this is the way things are going with this NHL Adidas Fanatic split, like, I don't know what the league's doing here.
I mean, just look at the actual jerseys that they're putting out on the ice, and I'm not sure what the league's been doing here. Adidas has not impressed me, like, from start to finish.
Yeah, there's been some weird ones. The Chicago one, you know, with that weird collar. There's some other really weird jerseys going on in the NHL this year.
I just don't, like, the worst part is they're not hard to get, you know? Like, go on Instagram and you can find so many different accounts of people putting up fan design jerseys, and they almost all look better. You know, like, Le Collectif Design has been throwing out Sens jerseys for probably the last 2 or 3 seasons, and each time they've been better than what the Sens are actually wearing. And it's just like, man, this isn't hard, you know? Like, just hire one graphic designer.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's not, it shouldn't be that hard. I mean, there are some nice jerseys. I'm seeing some highlights right now of the Minnesota Wild and Toronto game, and I do like the green Minnesota jerseys.
Yeah, I like minis. Although, but like even still, I like last year's green and red Minnesota jerseys as well, and they can those to go for like a similar offshoot. But I don't know. It's just like there's too many that I don't think are good. I think Colorado's got some great jerseys, but there's not a lot of teams where I feel like they really have improved in the last few seasons.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see once Adidas starts bringing in the third jerseys again. I know they didn't. I mean, it's all marketing, right? You take away the third jersey because this is your first year with the Adidas jersey, and most teams have made changes to their jerseys, so you want to sell these, and then you'll bring in the thirds once people have the regular home and aways. Same thing they've done in the CFL when Adidas took over the contract from Reebok there. So I think that's what will happen. I think people who are saying, oh, they got rid of our favorite third jerseys. Those third jerseys are going to come back, maybe not exactly the same as they were, and that may be a problem, but there will be third jerseys again.
I hope so. I mean, like, I look at something like even just like English soccer, you know, different third jerseys every year. They're always like fairly different from the team's regular scheme. And I find for the most part, they always look pretty good. Like it shouldn't be, it should be easy to create marketable products that you can sell if you just follow a guide like that. Like just make the jersey look good. That's all you have to do. And I'll buy it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, I have, well, maybe I'm not the best example of this because I have all like one each of, that's why I didn't want Price and Weber, because I already have Price and Weber jerseys in different variants. I have like every Habs jersey that they've worn since they did that centennial thing where they brought out all the alternate jerseys, and some of those alternates are hideous, and I still have them in my closet. So, I mean, I have a barbershop pole, Andre Markov, and I have a red and green Christmas jersey with Brian Gionta on the back. I mean, there's some hideous ones in my collection, but
you bought a Gionta jersey?
Well, he was captain at the time.
That's still inexcusable.
He was captain. He scored like almost 30 goals that year.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it makes more sense for a real Habs fan, but still inexcusable.
I have 14 Habs jerseys. I ran out of players.
I'll mail you a McDonough one.
Speaking of Ottawa, I guess a lot is going on in Ottawa right now. We've got reports that the Senators asked Erik Karlsson for his no-trade clause list. Then we have Eugene Melnyk coming out and saying they only asked for it because it was something to do with their bank debt resurfacing. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
Nothing he says makes sense.
I mean, it's a two-year, he's got a year and a half left on his contract, and he's got a 10-team no-trade list. Who exactly those 10 teams are, I don't know why any bank or loan finance officer would need to an update on that.
That's just Melnyk being Melnyk.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense to me. And there's rumors all the time. Mike Hoffman's one of the popular names rumored right now. But we saw this, what has happened to the Sens since the Duchesne and Turris trade. We see Turris coming out and ripping Melnyk, saying he would have stayed in Ottawa if not for the owner. What's going on? Like, what is happening from a Sens fan? This is what I'm seeing as an outsider. What are you seeing as a fan of the Senators?
I'm seeing the same. Honestly, it's the same thing you're seeing. I'm seeing Kyle Turris, who was beloved in Ottawa and who seemed to genuinely love Ottawa back, throwing the owner under the bus in what is a totally believable and reasonable thing. Like, I don't think there is a single person in Ottawa who is seeing that and going, yeah, I don't buy it. You know, like that just fits. It fits with everything. It fits with Alfredson. It fits with some of the things he said in the past. It's just, it is the biggest fear I always have as a Sens fan that Eugene Melnyk is going to cost us a player. And if he cost us Kyle Turris, then I'm not shocked, but I'm definitely frustrated because that was a true number one center. And just with what they gave up, and I know I've tried to justify this trade in the past, or at least justify that, like, yeah, they gave up, but they did get some good things in return. But like, we all know that this trade, they gave up too much. And it's just so frustrating to see that, you know, you could have had those assets and your number one center if the owner wasn't who he is. And that's just so frustrating for me. On the Karlsson thing, I don't know. I think it's a little extreme. I think Karlsson's comments about, you know, I'm no matter where I end up, I'm going to get paid kind of thing. Yeah. Like, who cares? Obviously, you were the best defenseman in the NHL. You know, this wasn't a big deal when Drew Doughty came out and was like, yeah, I'm going to get paid. Why does it matter if Erik Karlsson says it? It only mattered because Melnyk and management snapped back. Just let the man be the man, you know? Like, that's, I have literally no issue with him saying I'm going to get paid. And he would have got paid in Ottawa too, you know? Like, that is, or at least he should have, because that's your number one job as the GM of this team. So I really, like, the whole...
It's exactly, to me, I mean, Karlsson right now is exactly the position the Canadians were in with Carey Price last year at this time.
Mm-hmm.
And everything from Mark Bergevin was, and I know I've talked about Mark Bergevin and I have issues with him as a GM, and that, but that's the blueprint to follow. What Mark Bergevin did is the blueprint was, look, the CBA says we can't negotiate till July 1st. Relax, everybody. July 1st, we're going to contact his agent. We're going to sit down and we're going to work out a fair number to both sides. And we're not really worried about it. And we know that it's going to be costly, and that's the way it's going to be.
And that's all that needs to be said.
Yeah. Everybody can just calm down. He's not signed yet, but we couldn't sign him. We could have a contract agreement today, and the CBA says we cannot sign him until July 1st. So just everybody relax. There's lots of time to get this deal done, and we recognize how good a player Erik Karlsson is. We know he's the best defenseman in the league, and we're going to sign him. And we have lots of cap space, and we'll make it work. That's all you really have to say if you're the GM. But I don't know what's going on there that this is becoming a lot more complicated than it needs to be.
Melnick. Just plain and simple, Melnick. I mean, you look at Dorion saying, you know, all hockey decisions go through me, but we just know that's not true in Ottawa. Like, there has been time and time again where that has not been the case, and the team has publicly stated that that's not the case. Melnick has come out and said, we don't have the money. Or you know, the team has had that internal cap for so long. It's just so...
I mean, even if you have the cap, it's not... Montreal's a cap team every year. You know what? Jeffrey Molson had to put his stamp on an $84 million commitment to Carey Price. It wasn't just Bergevin's move. It's the same thing, and Melnick should be the same way. You know, I recognize I'm going to have to pay this guy, and that's what we're going to have to do. And we may have to, if you have an internal budget, that's fine. And you say, you know, we're going to pay him. It might mean we don't re-sign somebody else, or we have to make a trade elsewhere, then just be honest about it. But you can't let your franchise player like that go. Not at the age he's at, not with the number of good years he likely has left, as we look at the aging curve of not just defensemen, because obviously there's an aging curve there, but if we look at elite defensemen with his type of skating skill, mm-hmm. and offensive skill, they age tremendously well if they're not taking a lot of... It's the guys who are hitters and who block a lot of shots maybe don't age as well, but the Karlsson mold is the Scott Niedermayer mold, is the Nicholas Lidstrom mold, and it seems to age pretty well.
No, I have zero concern about where he goes as he gets older. It's just mind-boggling that this is even, you know, a thing of drama, you know, and it's kind of like Tavares to a certain extent. Like, will he get traded? And I guess Stamkos is a better example. Will he get traded? Will he go somewhere? Will he sign? You know, all of that drama. Most of the time, these guys end up staying with the team that they're with. You know, very rarely do we see true megastars go somewhere else, and only then in a ginormous trade in the case of PK Subban, or in a very strange trade in the case of Taylor Hall. You know, but rarely do we see guys of that caliber on the move within the league. And so I'm not particularly worried about that. I am worried about who they're going to ship out. You know, Cody Ceci was finally mentioned as like a potential asset for possibly the first time in his career from management, which is staggering. And then he goes and scores two goals in back-to-back games. So, you know, maybe they're taking him off that list, which would be a real loss. But... you know, someone's going to get dealt. If it's me, I look at CeCe first, Brassard second, but someone's going to be the casualty for making room for Karlsson.
And someone's going to be the casualty, as we talked about this season being somewhat of a lost cause and the record they would need to make the playoffs. I think someone's going to be the casualty of that. In terms of any UFAs that are UFAs this year are obviously on the market. And anyone who's got till the end of next year who comes up the same time as Karlsson, it might make sense to deal them at the deadline this year. You might get a bit of a premium rather than a rental of a team knowing I'm going to get this guy for two playoff runs.
Oh, for sure, for sure. I mean, if you are dealing Carlson, it might make sense to deal him this year. If you can get a package that is worth what he is, and that really limits the teams, but if you can get that, that might be worth it, because you are dealing two playoff runs with Erik Karlsson, and for a Stanley Cup, even contending team, heck, even a middle-of-the-road team who's coming in as like a sixth seed, you add an Erik Karlsson, and you've got a much, much better chance now of making a deep run in the playoffs.
He's going to play half the game for you.
Well, that's just it. You know you can run him out there for 30 minutes a night and he'll be fine, because he's done it before and he's done it for the Sens in the playoffs. You know how that works out. It for another team, if they do decide to deal him, we'd see. I don't know that you can get a package from a playoff team for what Carlson is truly worth without some weird sort of circumvention. You know, like unless you've got it written down in paper that, you know, after you make that trade, say, you know, to the Leafs for four first round picks, you know, they're sending Willie Nylander for future considerations in the offseason. I don't see a way that you convince a playoff team to give up the necessary pieces to grab that. So I think it's more of an offseason deal. But theoretically, if you're going to make the deal, you know, I'd want Carlson for two playoff series more than I would for one. And I think you can ask a little more for that.
Yeah, and it, not just Carlson, but I think other players. I mean, if the thing is to re-sign Carlson, then even some other players who may have 2 years left on their deal, again, there would be a bit of a premium trading them now versus trading them a year from now.
Oh, for sure, for sure. You know, with the Sens in particular, someone like Stone, if you can get him locked up, is up there. But Broussard would be a good one if you're looking for center depth. I know he hasn't looked the part so far this year. None of the top six has, but he would be one I would look at if I'm an opposing team, because maybe you can get him for cheaper than what he should go.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right, so I think we've exhausted this outdoor game stuff. Mm-hmm. Let's move on to some other stuff around the league. Right now we're looking at first we should talk about Last Word on Hockey. We're always looking for new writers. You can see the quality pieces that we put up at Last Word on Hockey, and you can check us out. If you check out lastwordonhockey.com/write-for-us, you can see how to apply. Your application will go to Colton and I, as well as Nick, but we usually overrule Nick anyway. two votes out of three is enough to get you in as a writer, and we do provide some remuneration for our writers based on hits. So if you're interested in writing about hockey, if you're listening to our show and are wondering how can I join these guys as a writer, as a guest on the radio show, as a contributor to Last Word on Hockey, go there and check it out.
It's not as bad as it seems, you know? Occasionally, Ben is a good guy.
Most of the time. I mean, if you're not a Sens fan, I'm usually pretty nice.
It's true. That's very true.
All right. So moving around the league, we saw the Columbus Blue Jackets take a 7-2 loss the mm-hmm. other night to the Edmonton Oilers. John Tortorella went to the microphone, said, "I'm not answering any questions tonight. I have nothing to say about the game," and basically left after about 15 seconds. Everyone said he was pretty nice about it, which is kind of strange for Torts in dealing with the media. But again, he did not make a statement, did not answer any questions. How do you feel about that?
I mean, I look at this from a couple different perspectives. My gut instinct is to look at it as a hockey fan first, where I say, wow, that was not Torts at all. Is he going soft? But my second instinct is to look at it as a journalist and having been put in that position where, you know, you're going there to do your job and the man you are relying on for a certain portion of your story to go up and say, "Sorry, guys, I know I'm contractually obligated to do this, but I'm not doing it tonight," and walk off is, you know, it's frustrating in the one sense. In the other sense, it becomes your story. And so, you know, I've seen a lot of critiquing him for not answering questions. As a journalist, it doesn't bother me that much because that, you know, that becomes the story, and it's easy to write on, and it's easy to talk about, and it's easy to say, look, you know, this is how frustrated he is. He's so upset he can't even speak to us. And so I think that part is he's come under perhaps undeserved flack for maybe not undeserved is the wrong word, but unnecessary flack. I think it was telling, though, that that's how he reacted. We saw a hint of the old torts there. And I think the explosion is coming. I think you agree with me on that one, but I think there will be a torts outburst on the way if this caliber of play holds up.
Yeah, I mean, I think I see some bit of growth in that from Torts, mm-hmm. in knowing that if I stand here and answer questions, I'm going to blow up. So I'm going to be as nice as possible and get myself out of here as quickly as possible before I blow up. I think that's what was going on there.
Oh, yeah.
And so that was some self-awareness from Tortorella. To make that type of a statement and that type of actions. But I do agree that he will get frustrated if that goes on for a few games. I don't know what's going on now. I saw before we came on the air that the Jackets had a 3-0 lead evaporate into a 3-3 tie tonight against the Islanders. And I don't know where they're at in that game now, but he certainly can't be pleased with his team blowing a 3-0 lead tonight.
No, I mean, this is the kind of thing that's getting him so frustrated. The Blue Jackets there is some real talent there, but I don't want to say I don't believe in them. I think they are what they are, and I think that's just a middle-of-the-road team.
Well, they have...
They top the Islanders, by the way, 4-6. Or 6-4.
Okay, so, but they have, to me, the same issues, and we talked about this with the RNH discussion in our last show. They're mm-hmm. the same issues that have plagued the Montreal Canadiens for years, and even when the Canadiens were a 110-point team, first place in the East. I mean, not this year. Obviously, this year there's some bigger problems in Montreal. But, you know, when Montreal the last few years has been a top 5 points team in the regular season and just not gotten it done in the playoffs, center ice is so important in the playoffs. It's huge. And goaltending's huge, and obviously both of those teams have Sergei Bobrovsky and Carey Price, arguably the two best goalies in the NHL. But if you don't have – and they have – Montreal did have, anyways, with PK Subban and Andrei Markov, one pretty good defense core, and I think that the Blue Jackets have one now. But I just don't see the center. Alexander Wenberg to me is a good center, but I know some of our Blue Jackets writers have argued he's a number one. I see him as a number two. He's a little bit too much of a perimeter guy for me to really call him a true number one. And there's not a lot of depth behind him at center. I mean, we've seen Nick Foligno clearly playing out of position at center this year for the Blue Jackets. We see Pierre-Luc Dubois on a nice run right now playing with Panarin, but he's 19 years old. I don't know that the Blue Jackets center line is ready to compete the way the rest of their team is.
No, and I think part of Dubois' current success is Panarin. If you look at the NBA, they have a stat basically called gravity, where it sees how star players pull defenders closer to them, basically as if they were a planet and they're drawing them in with gravity. Mm-hmm. I think Dubois is getting some success from Panarin's gravity and the special attention that you have to pay to a player like Artemi Panarin. But I'm right there with you. I don't think Wenberg is a true number one. I think he could be, you know, a 1A, 1B kind of guy maybe in a couple years. You know, it's okay if you've got him and another him right behind him, because then you're rolling them out and it works. But I don't think he's the kind of guy that takes over a team, you know?
Yeah, and that's kind of where I am with them. Hey, Seth Jones is a heck of a defenseman, and they had problems on their blue line for a long time. And it was a trade, and I realize you have to give to get, but that Ryan Johansson, it left a gaping hole at center for them that hasn't been addressed. And I realize if they hadn't made the trade, they'd probably have a gaping hole on defense that needs to be addressed. So I'm not saying it was a bad trade. I'm just saying you had a hole and you've moved where that hole was, and you still need to address another position now. You're still probably a player away from being a true cup contender.
I agree. And you know, I know our Blue Jackets fans and writers will think this is a little blasphemous, but I still don't think that Seth Jones equates to the player that Ryan Johansson is. I know there were some issues in Columbus that are no longer present in Nashville, particularly with fitness and his two-way play. But man, if it was just a change of scenery, it doesn't feel worth it. You know, if that's all it was that got him back in the game, a little mentality, a little different coaching, because Ryan Johansson is a really valuable player.
Yeah, I've said it before. I know our Blue Jackets writers disagree with me, but I didn't like that it was day one of Torts being the head coach and he benched his star center and then he went to the media and said he's not in shape. I mean, have a talk behind closed doors. Have you're 1-9 at the time. You just keep throwing him out there and maybe he's not playing great, but maybe game one of you coming in, it's not the time to rattle the cage of the number one guy. And it looked like that relationship never recovered and it led to a trade.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And hey, if you're 1-9, just keep playing him and he'll get in shape. That's how that works.
Yeah, and you know, like that's just what I saw in Torts is when he just first got to Columbus. It was like,
yeah,
why are you going after the one of the good pieces that you have?
That's just it. I know you want to make a statement, but I don't know that that's how you make it. It's how Torts makes it for sure, but it's not how I would make it.
Yeah, no, and that's always the way. I mean, Roberto Luongo and the Rangers with Marian Gaborik at the time.
Mm-hmm. Even McDonough.
Yeah, things go... we've all seen the pictures of him screaming and yelling in the World Cup at Max Pacioretty on the bench.
Yep.
I mean, you just don't embarrass one of your players like that, and especially so early into a relationship where... I understand when you get frustrated and that becomes your last resort is to go after someone publicly because... behind closed doors, whatever you're trying to message, you're trying to get through, they're just not getting it. But he does it so early in the relationship that I'm like, you couldn't have possibly reached the breaking point where this was necessary yet.
No, it's like his second option. You know, first option is like, hey, you're not going to try harder. Second option, blast them in front of the media.
Yeah.
Which, it's just not what you want from a coach.
No, it's very old school. All right, moving on, we've got the World Juniors coming up and we've got Team Canada doing their training camp. They lost today, their second straight loss to U Sports. I'm never really worried about these games against U Sports. Team Canada mm-hmm. often loses to them and they were CIS All-Stars before this. It's the simple reality of having players, a lot of the U Sports All-Stars played in the CHL. They may not have been at the caliber to make World Junior teams, but they were CHL players. And they did that when they were teenagers. And now they're 23, 24, and they've put on muscle and bulk. And it's men against boys out there. So you have more talents, maybe raw talent in the World Junior squad. But you have some pretty good hockey players who have very, very big physical size and advantages on the junior players right now. And so I'm not too worried about that. One question I do have though about this junior team is knowing that size and speed and that I've talked about, we see some players in the NHL who've started to struggle. Victor Mete, obviously with the Canadiens, was struggling after his first 10 to 15 games. His ice time has been drastically cut. And the Canadians said, you know what, maybe it makes sense for him to go play for Team Canada against other elite kids his age and be a top four defenseman for that team. And that's best for his development. I'm wondering if the same should have been done by, if that's the right move for the Habs, and if the same should have been done by the Colorado Avalanche with Tyson Jost and the Philadelphia Flyers with Nolan Patrick, both of whom are struggling to put up points, struggling to get ice time, but are playing regular, well, semi-regular shifts, regular shifts, third line, fourth line minutes in the NHL.
I agree, it's the right move. Sens did this with Curtis Lazar when he was struggling. It didn't help him, but he looked better there. And I think for the most part, these kids will do better when they're put in a position to succeed. Even if they're playing, you know, supposedly tougher minutes against younger competition, I think it's better to put them in that position than to trot them out for 7 minutes a night, 10 minutes a night in the NHL against weaker competition. You know, put these kids in the position where you want to play them in the future. You know, you don't train a third, you don't train them as a third liner and then hope they'll develop into a first liner. You know, play them as if they're a first liner, give them the opportunities that they should be getting, put them against the best of their age, watch them succeed, and then bring them back and give them a few more goes at it. You know, even just from a mentality perspective, that can be such a confidence boost. You know, if you are struggling, like a guy, like a Victor Mete, you know, who played well to start and is kind of slowed down a bit, you bring him back and show him again that, like, look, you still can do this. You're still good at this. This is where you can succeed. That can be huge for a player going back, even just to reassure them. I mean, we look at these players as objects, but you've got to think of it as, you got to think of them as people too. And it's so common, not even just in sports, but in anything. When you start a new task, whether it's a new hobby, a new passion, a new job, whatever it is, that you doubt yourself at the start if you don't immediately excel. At least I know that's how I frequently am. You know, like you get used to a certain level of performance, a certain success, especially when you're a top tier athlete like these guys. And when all of a sudden that success, that constant in your life is gone, there's some real doubts. You go back to a situation where you can have that performance and that consistency and that success, and it's just that little reminder that you need sometimes to be like, you know what, yeah, this is the right move. I can do this. Maybe it is a little harder, but I can do this. And I think the World Juniors is great for that. I think it was a mistake specifically for Nolan Patrick not to go, because he, more than anybody else in the league among the rookies, looks like he could use a jolt.
Yeah, and I mean, the Flyers are going nowhere. They're in the toughest division in hockey, and they had a 10-game losing streak, and I know they've won 4 in a row coming out of that. But in that division, to recover from a 10-game losing streak, you've got to win 16 or 17 in a row.
That's just it. You got to win close to 20.
Yeah, you know, that division is just brutal. So it's not easy to recover from it. If they were, you know, Montreal had the 1-7-1 start and looked like they've almost recovered from that in the Atlantic. But if they were in the Metro, they certainly wouldn't be close to being recovered. And that's where Philly has to look at things right now and say, we're not going anywhere. Does it make sense to keep playing, trotting this guy out there for 10 minutes a night? When he could go down to the World Juniors and be the first line center and thriving under that level of pressure, it would be a big thing as well. Because I think the World Juniors in Buffalo, this close to the border, Nolan Patrick would feel a level of pressure that is like NHL playoff hockey.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's going to be nuts. And you're right, for Philly. And you don't want to seem callous and say throw in the towel, but sometimes you have to recognize when you're just in a tough situation. And I know it's sports, and I know anything can theoretically happen, but 90% of the time, not anything happens. The thing you expect to happen happens. The good teams win, the bad teams don't. And when you go on a 10-game losing streak in a tough division, like, that's almost your season.
Yeah. It's just, in that division, it's so hard. There's 6 teams and 5 playoff spots likely, and the Flyers and Hurricanes are really up against it at this point.
I completely agree.
All right, so what do you think of Canada's squad going into this tournament? What have you seen so far? I don't know how much you've been able to take in. But what do you think about what this squad can do in Buffalo?
I have high hopes, as I always do going into it, but I've got to admit I'm a little bit cynical this year, just with not even just because of this team. You know, there's not – look, the blue line is solid. The forward core I'm a little questioning. But I think the biggest thing for me is just the last few years, they haven't looked excellent. You know, there were spots where Canada – truly looks dominant, but the World Juniors hasn't been one of them recently, and I'm not sure if it's because other countries are catching up to hockey or catching up to Canada, especially the US, or if it's just that, you know, we're old school coaching or what it is, but I haven't felt as confident the last few years as I have in the past.
Well, I mean, they did lose a gold medal in the shootout last year. And a game that they probably should have won, had some leads late in the game and some goaltending issues that let them down. I think another year older, Carter Hart has a chance to be the best goaltender in this tournament. And that's a huge backbone in this short tournament, especially when you get into the playoffs with single game eliminations. The team with the best goaltender usually is in contention for gold, if not wins it. So that's I think a big factor in their favor. And I really like this blue line. I think this top four, with Clegg coming back, with Fabro, with Jake Bean, with Victor Mete, and then further down, guys like probably it's going to be Cale Makar and Connor Timmins. And I'm not sure where the seventh's going to come from. There's quite a battle for that spot, but I think that this blue line is very solid. Yeah. I think if Carter Hart isn't solid, I know we talked about goaltending. If Carter Hart isn't solid, I think Michael DiPietro will be. He's been fantastic for Windsor for the last 2 years now. So I think that the goaltending should be okay. I do have some questions up front. I mean, Sam Steele's going to need to prove that he can take his game from what he does in the WHL to up a level to this World Juniors, playing against the elite of the elite in junior hockey. We saw Cody Glass get cut today. Bit surprising to see top 10 picks get cut. So it's going to be interesting. We saw another top 10 pick not even invited to camp, and that was Owen Tippett. So the Team Canada obviously feels that they have a team that can score if they're cutting guys like Cody Glass and Owen Tippett, who are bigger names who score at the junior level. I'm not convinced that they will have better players than those two on their roster, but I think we'll see a lot. We'll be depending on guys like Sam Steele, Jordan Kyrou, to be first line players for this club. And they are having outstanding years.
How do you feel about Dylan Dubé?
Dylan Dubé made that team as a excellent third liner last year, third, fourth liner, penalty killer. I think he should be put in the same role. I don't think you move him up into the first line necessarily just because he's a returning player. I mean, he was good in that role last year, and I think you leave him in that role. I don't think you necessarily ask him to be an elite scorer at the junior level, because I don't think he is an elite scorer. In the WHL, he may be, but not at World Junior level, where it's just, like I said, up a level and it's elite, a best on best.
Mm-hmm. That's fair. No, that was the kind of feeling I had as well, but I wanted to confirm that with you. I think for the most part, we're in agreement. Jake Bean and Cale Clegg, for me, are going to be two of the more important players on the team outside of Carter Hart. I really... really like Jake Bean's play, and I think
breaking up on me here, but yeah, no, I think Bean will be key to their offense, and I think Cale Clegg will have an important role on the power play. Those will be, depending how it shakes down, they will be on your number one and number two power play units, and you may go either way with them. I think that you'll see that, and I think Cale Makar may have a role on the power play as well, depending if they want to go two defensemen on the second power play unit. I'm a guy who likes to go four forwards on my first unit and go three forwards and two defensemen on my second unit. And the reason for that is a bit of conservative coaching. My second unit is often out there at the end of a power play, and I don't like to get caught with four forwards on the ice when things return to 5-on-5.
Yeah, I lost you mostly there, but I assume you were saying good things. You talked power play.
Yeah, I was saying I think that that we should see Cale Makar maybe on the second power play. I know that some conservative coaches like to go four forwards on the first power play unit, but mm-hmm. two defensemen on the second unit, because as the second unit is on the ice, the power play is expiring, and you can get caught on the ice with only one defenseman at 5-on-5 if you go with four forwards on your second unit. That's a possibility of happening. And so a lot of coaches who – I know a lot of teams are going to four forwards on the power play, but we still see the conservative coaches go 3-and-2 on their second unit for that reason.
Yeah, I really hate 3-and-2, like with a passion. And even, especially at this level, when you've got the caliber of players you're putting or you should be putting on the power play, it should be okay to go four forwards, because the theory is they'll still get the puck and they'll still have some offensive drive, even if they're there at even strength.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I can see that. But I mean, the way Cale Makar plays at this point in his career, he's almost the fourth forward out there. The way he jumps into the rush and he's certainly more an offensive player, and there are some questions about his defense at this point. So even with him on a second power play unit with, say, a Jake Bean, it mm-hmm. may be the same as having four forwards out there.
Yeah, that's fair. That's a fair critique.
So that's the World Juniors. I think Sweden will be a team to watch, because as good as Canada's blue line is, I don't think any team will have a better blue line than the Swedes.
Fair.
I think that
for obvious reasons.
Yeah, you've got Liljegren, you've got Dahlin. They didn't invite Adam Bockfist to their camp. They have a number of good defensemen as well. Finland has a strong defense core as well, with a couple of players in Jokke Harju and drawing a blank. Calgary drafted him.
Oh, jeepers.
Playing on their couple of first round picks on their defense and some solid CHL players. Guys who are already accustomed to the smaller ice, so playing in Buffalo won't be as big a factor.
I think that's one thing that does get overlooked a bit. By the way, Juuso Välimäki. Välimäki, excuse me, yes. Cannot speak. Was the defender you were thinking of?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Calgary had taken him just after, or was it just before Liljegren?
I think it was just before. He was 16th. Where was Liljegren?
Liljegren was 17. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's that, and they'll have an interesting team as well. Finland has some forwards who can put the puck in the net as well. They are going to be strong, a lot stronger than last year when they finished 9th in the tournament.
Yeah, that was disappointing.
Finland seems to be doing this every other year run, though, because this is the mm-hmm. fifth year in a row, because they had a gold medal. Then they were in the relegation round and finished 7th. Then they won the gold medal. Then they went to 9th. So
you're telling me they're going to win gold?
They may. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me with the team they have. They have a strong team. Their goaltending is strong as well, back from returning player from last year. They should be strong in all areas.
Yeah, they're a strong nation now.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a good group with Finland, USA, and Canada in it. The other group obviously has the Czechs, the Russians, the Swedes, and the Swiss. So that will be another pretty good group. And we should have some good hockey in Buffalo. We'll wrap up the show where we started it. How do you feel about a very important round-robin game being played outdoors at the World Juniors?
I hate it. I hate it so much.
It's ridiculous to me. I mean, yes, NHL regular season games are important, but they're one of 82 and you can recover from what World Junior games. This could be, I mean, that game could be for first place in the group and getting the easy draw in the playoffs.
It could be your tournament.
Yeah, it could be your turn. You could lose that game, and now in the next round, you're facing, you know, Sweden or Russia in the quarterfinals.
Mm-hmm.
It is such a huge game, and I really don't like the idea of wind or snow or bad ice or a bounce affecting a game that's between two countries who traditionally have played some really, really close games in recent years.
No, I'm curious to see what the players say after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I think that'll be telling.
The losing squad there, I think, will have some real gripes with having to have played it outdoors.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm thinking too. It just doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I mean, this isn't the first time the IIHF has done this. They've done this at World Championships. They've had an outdoor game at the World Championships a few years ago as well. So this is nothing new for the IIHF.
It is still dumb. That hasn't changed.
I agree with you on that one. All right. Well, that looks like all the time we have tonight. Anything in particular you want to plug tonight, Colton?
Not really. I mean, obviously, just go on Last Word on Hockey. That's where we've put a lot of great stuff out recently. We've got some new Wings writers who have been doing really, really well. Dan Mount. We got John Gove, where was he with before? Hockey Buzz?
He was with Hockey Buzz before.
Yeah.
And he's
yeah, we stole him away. He's getting some great stuff out for us. I mean, that's what I've been reading right now, recently.
Yeah, no, the Wings stuff has been particularly strong. I did like the potential trade bait article. We have, you know, it's weird because I saw on The Athletic and our articles went up within like half an hour of each other. So mm-hmm. both were written separately but both John Gove and Craig Custance had the same idea today. And that was that the Red Wings should really be showcasing and playing Peter Mrazek more. So if you want to see John Gove's take on that issue, check it out on Last Word on Hockey.
And you know what? I like John's article more. Sorry, Craig. Putting it out there.
All right. Well, have a good night, and we'll talk next week before we go off for Christmas. We'll have a special Christmas show.
Sounds good.
All right. Have a good night, Colton.
You too.
You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.